This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro. Although more than 90,000 Americans have died of COVID-19, it's important to remember that the vast majority of people infected with this disease survive. We're learning more about what the recovery process looks like. While we often hear about patients who get over their symptoms in a couple of weeks, for some, it is a long journey. We have two COVID-19 survivors to share their stories, as well as a doctor who has been treating people. Dave Leal joins us from Denver, Colorado, and Jessica Stapleton is from Carmel, Indiana. Good to have you both with us. Thanks for being here this evening.
Good evening.
Thank you.
Jessica, I'd like to start with you. I understand you got sick in the middle of March, 2 months ago, and today you're still not 100%, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Tell us about your journey. What's happened?
Well, it's been 9 weeks, it was really frustrating because in the middle of March, there wasn't a lot of information about what to do when you fell sick. So I tried calling the local hospital. They have a COVID app. And it was a really long line with like hundreds of people waiting. So by the time I got through, hours later, my symptoms would kind of ease. So they just told me to quarantine and to self-isolate. But on day 14, my symptoms got so bad that I felt like I couldn't get air into my lungs, like something was constricting my airways.
Yeah.
So I went to the ER. They monitored me. They gave me an IV. They told me that under normal circumstances that they would keep me for monitoring, but they had protocols to send you home if your oxygen level was above low 90s. And they got me up to 97%, so they sent me home.
And you say that was 2 weeks into this 9-week journey. And so for the last month and a half or so, have you just been struggling along at home?
Yes. They sent me home, really no clear instructions on what follow-up should be, but I was in a really bad place. Like, I have no memory of about a week.
Wow.
That entire week, I don't remember it. My husband actually mentions things that happened, and I have no recollection.
That's so scary. Dave, I know you've also been sick for quite a while. Can you tell us what your experience has been like? Is it very different from what Jessica has described?
So the beginning was very similar. I actually ended up going to a clinic. I waited 2 hours to get a test. And then after waiting 2 hours, they're like, oh, we ran out of tests 30 minutes ago. And then I was just so frustrated and sick at that time, I was like, just went home. And then like a week later after that is when I finally went to the emergency room because I was at the point where I could no longer take in food or use the restroom. And it was like lost 15 pounds by that point. And so for me, I was in the hospital for 5 days. They created a custom antibody cocktail. My pulse ox was below 88, which is the threshold. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, I was in hospital for 5 days and then finally got released and was on quarantine, you know, about 2 weeks after I started feeling better. It wasn't 2 weeks from the time I got released from the hospital. So,
Jessica, I understand you're one of the moderators of a Facebook group today for people who have had COVID-19. What are you learning from the other people in that group?
You know, it's just a great place to have support and know that there are thousands of other people that are going through lingering symptoms that aren't getting better in 2 weeks. We're just learning, you know, maybe even quicker than some of our doctors about what to expect.
Well, I want to bring in a doctor's voice. Dr. Chuck Vega is a family medicine doctor and clinical professor at the University of California, Irvine. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Will you bring some context to these two stories that we've heard from Dave and Jessica? How typical is it for symptoms to persist for a month or more?
Well, first, I want to thank Dave and Jessica, not just for their courage in fighting this severe infection, but also their courageousness in presenting their stories, because these stories are unfortunately very common, and they speak to the broad and ongoing effects of this infection. I mean, imagine that you're struggling with severe symptoms, but also battling severe logistics at the same time. And there's so many individuals out there who don't know what their next steps are, what to do, and how to react to their symptoms as they grow and change, naturally speaking, with the infection.
Well, that's the thing that strikes me about both of these stories, is that we're not only hearing about the arc of the disease, but about the kind of failures and shortcomings of the health system in places as different as Colorado and Indiana.
Right. And these stories are common everywhere. I hear these from other clinicians and other patients, and certainly our physicians, our patients here in Southern California as well. And now we're in an interesting stage where my patients are also struggling with the concept of returning to normal life, and particularly returning to work, because what their employers are requiring from them is different than what may be acceptable to me or the CDC. And it weighs on them in terms of not just their physical limitations, which might be ongoing even a month or more after the infection, but it's also providing for their families.
Yeah, Jessica, is that something that weighs on your mind? I mean, is your work situation one where you're thinking about when and how you might be able to return?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I do have the capability to be able to work from home, but it is a struggle to even do that. I was on short-term disability for 3 weeks with this, and it is a struggle.
And Dave, for you?
For me, I returned to work basically like second week in April or so, and my employee's been fully understanding and great. And I work from home normally anyway, so it wasn't a big adjustment for me.
Dave, do you have a question for Dr. Vega?
Yeah, so based on like the data that we have from, you know, SARS, which is, I know, is different but similar, you know, is there, do we have a better understanding of what the long-term effects are for COVID-19 patients?
That's just a great question. And you're right, we can't equate SARS-CoV-2, the virus behind the COVID-19 infection, with the SARS virus. But there is data showing that at 6 months, about 15% of individuals post-SARS had reduced lung function, 30% had abnormal chest radiographs. These are folks with more severe infections, mind you, so it doesn't necessarily hold for folks with milder infections. And there was just a study published which followed patients for 15 years after that SARS epidemic, and found that 5% still has some pulmonary lesions on imaging. So we don't know the story, but it's certainly something to follow up on. And if you had the infection and you're not feeling right, make sure you're getting the healthcare you need so we can follow these things.
Are those kinds of long-term effects something that would be evident to a person who's recovered from the disease, or would they need a test to find out?
I think they need both. Certainly, patients know themselves well. They know when they're not able to walk the same amount when they're, you know, walking through the grocery store or playing with their kids. They'll recognize that. It's our job on our side that once they are in that subacute phase, that we can start initiating the kind of testing and follow-up to prove what's going on, and then think about therapeutic options.
Okay, stay with us. We have Dr. Chuck Vega, as well as Dave Leal and Jessica Stapleton, both recovering from COVID-19. And you're listening to The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.